The dream season of Seattle is not off to a good start, Tommy.
That's a good way to put it. Although, very cool moment, Griggs, and neat to see the two newest members of the NHL going toe-to-toe to open up the season. I know they're the back half of the doubleheader tonight, but yikes. You know, we heard going into the year the NHL expected, 98% of its players to be vaccinated, and maybe we have some breakthrough cases here with the Kraken at the worst possible time, and then the stuff with Nate MacKinnon testing positive. A bit of a reminder, I guess, that we're not out of the woods yet, but we're getting very, very close. And listen, I don't think it's going to be a repeat of what we saw from the Golden Knights at the start of the 17-18 season with the Seattle Kraken team. I just don't think the scoring's there, but it would be cool to see them win their first game, and that's going to be severely hampered tonight. Don't get me wrong. We'll be still watching it, though, because it's going to be cool to see the teams that just entered the league taking on one another. And it hits home that now it's hockey season for real.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of numbers. Like, some people have Seattle finishing high, like top 10 in the league, and I'm just
come on.
I'm not into it. I don't buy that one whatsoever. The Edmonton Oilers, Devin Shore tweaked something yesterday in practice, so Dave Tippett, he was off today. He's not sure if he'll go tomorrow. We'll see, but Zach Cassian will play. I'm expecting Broberg and Turris to swap spots on the roster today. But then they also have to make another move if they're actually going to activate Colton Sevier. Shager reporting that a contract is coming. I would guess probably close to the league minimum at $750 or so. So we'll kind of see what happens there. But Devin Shore, you know, him and Perlini have been it's funny to say this. Obviously, no one's expecting them to produce like they have in the regular season. But, man, on the ice this season, that duo has been pretty good when you look at possession numbers and everything else.
Yeah, the timing sucks for Devin Shore. And here's an opportunity for Ryan McLeod potentially to come out of mediocre training camp where he looked okay doing what we know he's capable of doing, and that's transporting the puck, winning some faceoffs. I don't think he was particularly great on the dot in the preseason, but creating zero offense, really. And now, if Shore can't go tomorrow, potentially Saturday, here's McLeod that could step in, and maybe he could ride the hot hand of a Brendan Perlini. And maybe they can get a little offense going. And if they don't light the lamp, listen, let's be realistic about it. Try to create a little offensive momentum. Get some opportunities to score and make stuff happen out there offensively, because that's kind of the one thing that hasn't been happening for McLeod in his brief NHL career. But with Shore going down, and we'll see how long, maybe McLeod could take advantage and find that confidence that he's been searching for at the NHL level offensively.
He's going to start the season, he being Dave Tippett, with McDavid and Draisaitl, and it's a home game. Right, it's early. I think you're going to see Dave Tippett on the road at certain times, definitely split them up. But I think when he's got the home ice advantage, I think Dave Tippett, they didn't get off to a good start last season. Connor McDavid even talked about it, especially their opening game. He didn't like it at all. So I look at this one, and I think you're going to see McDavid and Draisaitl maybe a little bit more often on home ice to take advantage more of home ice. They're the most dangerous duo in the game.
Yeah, we're getting that sense. Pedal to the metal. Don't let up at all. And it's interesting that last year's start really comes up, because there was no preseason last year. The team looked sloppy, and it showed with their results, 3-6 to start the year. And then Mike Smith came back, and things started to turn around. The power play really kicked up. The PK started to buckle things down, and things came into line. This year, we had the full preseason. They had 8 games. Things look good in the preseason. I don't care for the team's overall record in the preseason. It's just the little things we saw in the games. If this is one way to get off to a quick start, maybe try to jump ahead or keep pace with the Vegas Golden Knights, because we anticipate them to be right at the top of the Pacific Division standings, fine. And you know, I've seen the comments and the memes about going out and getting Connor McDavid a winger and then only to play him with Leon Draisaitl. I get that rationale, but at the same time, you can move so many pieces around in this top nine that I think it all, and it's becoming abundantly clear that depending on the opponent, that's what Dave Tippett's going to do to try to get the best advantage over whoever he faces. And I'm sure game to game, we could see this lineup changing and being flexible. Plus, we all know McDavid and Draisaitl will play a ton together, even if they start on different lines in games. There's scenarios where they're together.
I think that I'm going to say this right now. But I'm not going to do it a lot this year. I'm not focusing on the lines if they change from game to day. I think it's a real lot of wasted. Oh, played McDavid and Draisaitl three in a row. Oh, that means they have no. It's if they win games, that's all that matters in the regular season, right? And I would expect to see Draisaitl and McDavid probably more together in the first half of the year, and I could see it in the second half of the season. You want to finalize your lineup to the playoffs, right? Definitely that month of April. I could see in even March. I think that's when it's going to happen. You don't need to do, it's a long season. What you do in October helps you in the standings, but the style of play and even who you're playing really is kind of irrelevant come playoff time. It's more so what you're doing with who you have coming down the stretch. And I think that's when you're going to see, McDavid and Draisaitl separated more. I also think there's a part of this starting with McDavid and Draisaitl. It's a little bit of a, hey, we need you other guys going. So it can't just be we're going to rely on these two. Mm-hmm. And I love that message because last year it was not good enough from every other forward. Even I'll give Puljujärvi a little bit of a pass because he did have 11 goals 5-on-5. But the Oilers group of forwards from 3 to 12, they combined for 59 goals 5-on-5 in 56 games. That's horrific. You got to be way better. More production from 3 through 12.
Yep, and that's still a second-place finish in the North Division. It feels like this is a legitimate top nine, at least, and then if you want to extend it to top 12 set of forwards, I like the addition of Fogle. I think he's been steady in the preseason, adding an element that they never had. We'll see what Nugent Hopkins and Hyman can do together, two responsible veteran guys. Yamamoto getting that goal the other night in Vancouver, Greg, I thought that was... he needs something like that. A goal scorer's goal to get him into the groove and reminding himself that he can actually do it. And you bring up Puljujärvi last year. It was Yamamoto who got off to a decent start, and then they basically flipped. One guy got hot, and the other guy got ice cold. If you need those guys going, obviously, and let's see if that can actually happen. And then we'll see what Zach Cassian's at this year. Scary incident, but good sign to see him on the ice today. Looked like he was okay.
Oh, yeah, he looked fine. Dave Tippett said he's going to go through one more series of tests, but it looks like Cassian will be in the opening lineup with Fogle and Derek Ryan tomorrow night against the Vancouver Canucks, who will have Alex Chiasson on their top line with Brock Besser injured. It looks like Chiasson was skating on the top line in Vancouver this morning with Pettersson and Miller. They got Horvat with Garland and Pearson. One small little detail, I don't know if you noticed it, Tom, in that final preseason game in Vancouver, Derek Ryan went 1-for-10 in the faceoff circle, and Nugent Hopkins was like 3-for-13. Like, it was brutal.
He got crushed.
They got like JT Miller, who's playing wing tonight. He won every faceoff he took. He was perfect 7-for-7. It's a small little detail, but it's one that just can't happen in the regular season. You can't get dominated to that level.
No, and we did bring that up on the post game show. Not good. Like, this shouldn't be the case. Maybe it's an anomaly, but, man, you need possession. It starts with face-offs, and you need Ryan winning face-offs. You need Nugent Hopkins winning face-offs, and certainly McDavid. We know Draisaitl is the best at it on the team, but that's something that I'm sure, you know, especially tomorrow, we'll keep an eye on. And then one other thing with Chiasson, who looked really good in the preseason, is I saw a note from our good pal Irv Gafar that Brock Besser is scheduled to travel, wasn't ruled out, but he's missed some time, so could be Chiasson up on that top line. Good to see him get a deal. One of the good guys in the game, Gregs, you know that. He's a guy that never shied away from any questions and was just a good soldier when he was here in Edmonton.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, good for Alex Chiasson. You always want to see any player who can get themselves another contract in the National Hockey League. Good for him. He's a guy at, that would make him 3-for-3 on PTOs, turning PTOs into contracts. He's got to be the first guy to go on 3 PTOs and get 3 different contracts.
There's got to be a stat somewhere like that, but yes. Good for him. Yeah, that's outstanding. He's a good dude, just a good hockey player.
Now, James Neal also signed in a one-year deal with the St. Louis Blues, Tyler Ennis. So three former Oilers who were on PTOs, each one of them signed. Vancouver for Chiasson, Neal in St. Louis, and Tyler Ennis in Ottawa. Funny enough, Ennis got the most money. He got $900, whereas Neal and Chiasson each got $750, but that's probably a little bit due to the salary cap of those two teams. Give me your thoughts, Tommy, on the Oilers and where you see them finishing in the division.
I do think, and this is the safe bet, I think it's second in the division, but I feel like they can challenge the Golden Knights, and who's to say they're not capable of it? I know we give the Golden Knights a ton of respect, and they've been excellent since they've entered the National Hockey League, but this might be an Oilers team that might actually finally be emerging. And I think, you know, at the end of the 19-20 season, when everything got shut down, 71 games, and the Oilers were right there battling it out with the Golden Knights. And I know Vegas added Petrangelo, and Stone's been great for them. Alec Martinez has been great. I don't particularly think they're better in goal. I like Robin Leonard. He's a very good goalie, but you just gave up future Hall of Famer Marc-Andre Fleury for basically nothing. And the questions down the middle for the Golden Knights is concerning as well. They don't have a ton of centermen that you can look at and go, geez, they're great down the middle. They're built from the wing in, but it works for them. And they have great defense and really solid goaltending. Why can't the Oilers compete with them? So I think second, potentially first, and then the other couple of teams, maybe Vancouver and Calgary duking it out. And I'm with you, Seattle. I'm sorry. That's a team that's going to struggle to score any goals. And I'm curious to see how Phil Grubauer looks with a team that's a little more suspect in front of him than what he had in Colorado the last couple of years.
Yeah, Vegas is an interesting one to me because of, well, they still don't have a number one center. I'm sorry. And
they don't.
You know, they have good depth on the wings. I understand all that, but they don't have a number one center. Marc-Andre Fleury won the Vezina for them last year. Robin Leonard,
yeah.
To match that's pretty hard to do. Right, there's no question about it. So, I do also think the Alex Tuch injury is a big blow to them. I like their team. I like their top four defense for sure, and Petrangelo, Martinez, Theodore, and McNabb. But I don't think they have enough depth down the middle, and that's why I think Edmonton has closed the gap because their depth overall. And Edmonton's goaltending, actually, it's funny. I saw, and I'm going to get him on the show, Mike McKenna. He was doing the rankings for goaltending tandems, and he ranked the Oilers 26th. And I'm like, well, I think it's based solely then off of reputation, because if you look at their numbers, last year they had the 7th best team save percentage in the NHL.
Yeah.
Right? And from January, and from January 2020 till last year, they're 6th best. So why are they suddenly going to fall off a cliff, both of them? Like, Smith was really good last year. Koskinen wasn't that good. So if he goes up a bit and Smith comes down, like, can Koskinen go up to 908 and Smith goes down to 915? Well, then they're still the same on average as what they were last year.
Yep. Hey, and the team defense, we've talked about it at length. You've brought it up. The 5-on-5 play steadily has improved. And when you're getting the first save, sometimes second, and then if you have to get that third save, if you can't clear out the rebounds, these guys have been doing it. I know I've had my fair share of comments in regard to Mikko Koskinen. He had a great preseason. So credit where credit is due. And to me, I'm still curious when I look at the goaltenders and go, are they going to be able to be a pleasant surprise yet again? Potentially. And you make a good point, but that's still my big question mark is, can those two do it? And then maybe if you sprinkle in some Stuart Skinner, if opportunity presents itself, what does that goaltending tandem, potentially trio, look like? It still doesn't hinder them from being one of the contenders in this division.
Tom Gazzola joins us at the Sports Center, TSN 1260. Tommy, the Elks, oh my goodness. It's kind of what, it was a bloodbath. It was what I expected. Although just when you thought they couldn't be worse, they were worse. Like, the numbers in that game, a total offense of 159 yards. They had 15 series. 7 of them resulted in 2 and outs. Then they had 2 more that were 3 and outs, right? So they got 1 extra play. Then another 2 that were 4 and outs. Like, you're talking 11 out of 15 series, you were either 2 and out, 3 and out, or 4 and out. Like, awful how bad they were. Awful.
And you, you didn't want to go into the game and see it play out the way you expected it to, and that's exactly how it was expected to play out. I think maybe even the play of Trevor Harris, I know he banged up his hand really early in the game. I can't remember if he hit a helmet on his follow-through on a throw. He just, obviously, there was nothing there. And there were some moments, if you want to look at, like, if you want to really scrape for some positives, James Wilder, a few instances look good. The defense, Greg's, they were on the field for what? Almost 40 minutes? It was, they bent and bent and bent, and then they finally broke late in the game. They were probably gassed. It was everything you didn't want it to be, but you thought it would. It came to fruition. And listen, the rest of the season is going to be a long haul. Interesting, too, how they said that they're going to go with Cornelius and Prokop this Friday. And we'll see how that plays out. But on the field, it's getting bad already. It's very bad. Off the field, very bad. This will be a season to forget, certainly, when it comes to the 2021 Edmonton Elks. And unfortunately, we still have, what, 6 games to go? So we'll get through it, and the rebuilding begins for 2022. Pardon me.
Tommy, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow, season opener for the Oilers.
2-hour pregame show tomorrow, Greg's. I'm pumped.
Let's go. That's